Jay Perini is a poet, novelist, and teacher. He's also the author of Promised Land, 13 books that changed America.
This is not a list of great books. Only probably two or three of these books would be considered great books with big capital letters. I'd say Huckleberry Finn, Walden. Let me think. That's about it. two great books on this list of 13 books. The other books are profound, influential books, books that really changed the way Americans saw themselves. And what I also say in my intro is these are not just books that stand alone. No books that are important stand alone. Each of these is a climate of opinion, and maybe two dozen, three dozen books swirl around it. There are all the books that led up to it, and then all the books that come from it. For example, with Walden by Henry David Thoreau. This didn't come from nowhere. He'd been reading the German Romantics. He'd been reading the essays of Emerson. He'd been reading a lot of nature writers, Gilbert White in England. And so he was coming from somewhere, and a lot of different important influences suddenly converged in Henry David Thoreau while he sat in his cabin at Walden Pond. And then you think of the endless books that flowed out of Henry David Thoreau. The whole tradition of American nature writing kind of expands from him. Books like Pilgrim at Tinker Creek by Annie Dillard. Yeah. I mean, there's a vast range of books that come out of Thoreau. So like I said, each of these books is kind of a nodal point, but there are the books that come before it and the books that then hugely follow in its wake.
What ways did Walden change America then that Emerson didn't? Did Emerson change Thoreau so that Thoreau could write Walden and change America?
Well, Emerson was always kind of rhetorical and in some ways theoretical. His sentences are absolutely perfect, but rarely does it add up in the kind of way that Walden adds up. Walden is a wonderful narrative. And over the generations, now Walden, remember, was not a bestseller at its time. I don't think he sold 5,000 copies. But it's one of those books that gradually gathered weight as the decades rolled on. And by the 20th century, this was a book where, can you think of how many readers have read this book and gone for a walk in the woods, have read this book and suddenly saw connections between spirit and nature that simply they hadn't seen before. I first read Walden when I was about 20 years old, and I can remember really going on a backpacking trip shortly thereafter and sitting under a tree and underlining passages. This is a book that I've gone back to every year in my entire adult life, and I take a walk myself in the woods every afternoon. I go for an hour and a half in the woods near my house in Vermont. And the spirit of Henry David Thoreau lives with me. Passages from that book keep circulating in my memory. He informs the way I see things. He's such a visual writer. You never look at a pond the same after seeing Henry David Thoreau. You see it as a metaphor of mind. And it's like this with all of these books. Once they're read, they change the way we live our lives.
That's Walden's legacy in one sense. There's another, though, isn't there? Another of the books that is on your list of 13 is Uncle Tom's Cabin, Harriet Beecher Stowe's book. You don't think of Thoreau as caring much about race, but in fact, he cared very much. He was a strong abolitionist. It leads almost directly to Stowe.
Oh, you know, those two books work wonderfully in apposition next to each other. Thoreau was, of course, a strong abolitionist. And, you know, I think one of the reasons he refused to pay his poll tax was because of slavery. He was an anti-imperialist. He was a terribly interesting guy. I mean, of course, he wrote Civil Disobedience, the work that so much inspired Mahatma Gandhi in India and South Africa and influenced Martin Luther King so profoundly. Now, Harriet Beecher Stowe is an interesting story. Her book is not read much these days, but it was, after the Bible, the best-selling book of the 19th century in America, possibly in the whole world. I don't know about that, but certainly in America it was. They had to keep 8 printing presses going 24 hours a day for months and years on end, trying to keep up with the demand for this book. When Abraham Lincoln invited Harriet Beecher Stowe to the White House, and I think it was in the midst of the Civil War, I'm thinking it was 1863 he invited her. He greeted her at the door of the White House, took her hand in his big hand, looked down and said, "Aha, you're the little lady that started this great war." And there is the sense in which Uncle Tom's Cabin galvanized abolitionist opinion in the North. and somehow made it intellectually and spiritually possible to go to war against your neighbors and your brothers.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Because this is one of only, I think, three novels on your list, and you're giving it a lot of weight. A novel Yes. shouldn't be able to start a war. A novel shouldn't be the diatribe that gets people thinking. And yet...
Harry Beecher Stowe, let me tell you the truth. Of all the 13 books on my list, this is the only one I had never read before. I knew it was important. I wondered what it was like. I had read how much influence it had on America's thinking about abolition and about slavery and how it had affected the whole nation and the world. And I sat down to read it one morning and thought, well, I don't know how much time I'll spend on this. Well, I read till midnight. I read the whole book in one single day. She's one of the great storytellers of all time. I mean, this is Stephen King on steroids. I mean, it's good. And also, it's actually one hell of a story. You know, I love the tale. It's thrilling to read, and it's extremely well written.
You make a case for novels here, too, because she's telling a story that is not factually correct, maybe, but that is spiritually correct. It brings to life a time and a place and attitudes that a dry recitation of the facts wouldn't accomplish.
That's right. Sometimes novels are truer than history. I was chatting with my English friend Peter Ackroyd the other day, and he writes biographies and novels. And I said, Peter, what's the difference between your biographies and your novels? And he said, well, in my biographies, I feel free to invent things, but in novels, I have to tell the truth. There's something wonderfully Oscar Wildean about that fact. But novels sometimes can be truer than facts.
Yeah. Another of the novels that you've included in here is Huckleberry Finn, and I think a lot of people would agree that that is a novel, both good and bad in some ways, that has affected thousands of Americans in the years since.
Well, you know, it's the most quintessentially American novel for various reasons. One reason is that Mark Twain embodied the American language, the kind of vernacular, the way people really spoke, in a way that had never been done before in fiction. And I still think it's the authentic American voice, Mark Twain. And he got it just right in Huckleberry Finn. Sometimes it's so poetic, you know, when they're gliding along the river, the description of the islands and the forests along the side are so beautiful, the sunset on the water. It's also a great story. It's a wonderful story about race. I mean, the relationship between Huck and so-called Nigger Jim is very complex. And as you know, Huck sides with Jim and decides in favor of setting him free, even though he's breaking the law in his own view. It's also a novel about lighting out for the territory. I mean, this is a very crucial American mental motion, the idea that we must set out for the West, go out into the wilderness. One of the aspects of the American character that so comes through in all these books is this adventurousness, this willingness to go into the wilderness, to take your chances, to take a risk. Goes right back to the pilgrims landing in Plymouth Rock.
You know, listening to you, I realize that there is a certain quality about lists that obviously appeals to you. Lists of people, lists of books, lists of ideas that are a continuum throughout the history of America.
Yeah, well, that's because I'm an insomniac. I lie in bed at night thinking of these things. But I do see a continuum. I see so many different strands in American life. I see our rational strand, the self-inventiveness that goes from Ben Franklin through Dale Carnegie right up to the present. And I see a deep spiritual strand, starting with the Plymouth plantation and our founding pilgrims. You know, there was this obsessive religious streak in American culture. I see our love of nature, which goes, you know, from the journals of Lewis and Clark through Walden, right up to On the Road with Jack Kerouac, this, you know, love of the countryside, of nature.
You know, there are a lot of lists out there. There are a lot of life list books, you know, 1,001 paintings you've got to see before you die. Do you have any idea why, you must have some idea, why we like these lists so much?
Well, I've always been a list lover, and I do know that an editor at a magazine once said to me, if we want to sell a copy of an issue of our magazine, we put on the cover the 12 or 13 or 7 great something or others. And people love these kinds of lists because experience is so disparate and life is so confusing and chaotic that whenever we try to make sense of things, we start making lists. I mean, lists are the way we organize our daily lives, and lists of ideas, of people, I'm always making lists of one kind or another, and this is how I organize my thoughts and organize my experience.
Jay Perini is the author of Promised Land, 13 books that changed America.